everybody. My name is Chris, and I am an alcoholic.
Chris.
And my sobriety date is June 18th, 2008. So that's today. Thank you. Super grateful for that. So it's a cool, neat thing to ask them to speak on your sobriety date. I'd like to thank Darian for asking me to speak. And to qualify, I have a sponsor who I talk to regularly. I sponsor other men, and I have a home group. It's the Monday Night Speakers Meeting over in St. Petersburg, Florida. And just to avoid any confusion or anything, the name, it's a speaker meeting, and it meets on Mondays. So that was a joke my sponsor Roger used to always tell. And Roger, a lot of us here knew Roger. Roger and I were together for about 15 and a half years. Huge blessing, huge impact on my life. And Roger passed away about 2 years ago. And Roger, when he would talk, would always talk about his sponsor who had passed away, Charlie Howard. And Roger would say, "Man, as long as I'm alive, I'm going to talk about Charlie Howard, a man who helped me." So I always say, as long as I'm alive, I'm going to talk about Roger Hightower. And Roger would tell that joke about our home group. It was both our home groups. And him and I both got sober in Louisville, Kentucky. And Roger would say, he goes, "You got to clarify, because back in Louisville, the Tuesday night step group met on Saturday mornings." And one time I asked him, because I got sober in Louisville, but I was only there about 5 months before I moved down here, so there was a lot of stuff I didn't know. And I asked him once, I said, "You just made that up, by the way, right? To like illustrate that point about, the name." And he said, "Oh, hell no, that's true." alcoholics don't like change, man. And Roger's sponsor is sitting right here. But the funny thing, the ironic thing, really, is AA is all about change. And we change. I'm different than I was, 6 months ago because of this program, for working this program. And I'm super grateful for that. Some things are the same about me 18 years ago, but a lot is different. And one of the neat things about our sobriety dates, I feel, is I get pretty reflective, this time a year, because, June 18th of 08, I was not an alcoholic, the day before I came into AA. I came here and I always say I caught alcoholism. But think back, even like May of that year, I had no idea. I was just weeks away from my life totally changing. It's a beautiful thing to get the experience. Good job, Reagan. That takes a lot of courage to come up here, and especially when we're newer in sobriety. But again, AA is a lot about doing stuff, right? That to me, it looks like it's not going to work. Or why would I do that? How's making coffee going to help me stay sober? All these things. But we come in here and we learn to take suggestions. And again, it's a beautiful thing, because I wouldn't listen. I know everything. I know. I always want to remain willing and loyal, or willing and loyal to the program. Just willing. Green is, the word I'm looking for. My sponsor today, been sober 62 years, and still does the deal. He talks all the time about, always working on ourselves, always growing. There's always new opportunities for growth. So our book talks about, what it was like, what happened, what it's like today. And so I come from a really good family. If you look at my life on paper, there's no reason I should, quote unquote, no reason I should be an alcoholic. My dad was worked 9 to 5. My mom was a stay-at-home mom. I have an older sister. She's 4 years older than me. No alcoholism in the family. Grandparents on both sides. Nothing traumatic or dramatic happened to me as a child. It was just a good, normal upbringing. And, that's not the case for a lot of us. You hear some fifth steps. That's not everybody's experience. But I just believe I was born with this thing. And I'm glad I don't waste any time wondering why it is I'm an alcoholic. I believe I always had the isms. When I first came in, I was 28. I thought I was too young. And I was into all the other substances, all these other outside issues, you know, however I can catch a buzz, man, I was all about it. You need to shoot it or snort it or whatever it was. But drinking was always there, but just something about drinking being illegal, I just couldn't see it as a problem. So when I came into it, one of the things I related to the most was, you know, the feelings and the thinking and the things we do. And I saw there was a solution there, which, you know, I'll get into. I'm from Northeast Ohio, and just recently I went to visit my parents with my son. I have a 4-year-old son. Went to visit my parents a couple weeks ago, the week before Founders Day. Founders Day was June 10th. But went up to Akron. It's only about an hour from where I grew up, and had to go to Dr. Bob's house. And the Gatehouse, if you're familiar with that, where Bill and Dr. Bob first met. So if you ever had the opportunity to get up there and see all the AA history, it's a really, really cool experience. I love our history. Growing up, things were good. But again, like I said, I kind of always had the isms. And one thing I remember was I couldn't wait to get older and grow up. I grew up in a neighborhood with a bunch of kids around me and my sister's age. And we'd play in the street and come inside when the street lights came on. And I remember as some of my friends, their older brothers, as they got a little bit older, they stopped hanging out with us. I remember they got into high school, and I remember watching them, like, get their driver's license and, like, go to prom. I remember watching them driving their cars down the street. And I don't know if this, you know, is accurate or not, but this, I was born in 1980, so I grew up, you know, a lot of those 80s movies or early 90s movies, like License to Drive. Anybody remember the Corys? Revenge of the Nerds? Breakfast Club? Like, my perception was that high school was just a big party, and, like, I couldn't wait to get to high school, because I associated high school with, you get a job, so you get a little bit of money, you can start dating girls, and you drink, and you get a driver's license. So I couldn't wait to do that. I always wanted to be older, and I remember when I got into high school, like, I went to a K-8 school for, like, middle and elementary school. So going to high school was, you know, a big change, but the most important thing to me was just to be cool and fit in. And that was, like, the most important thing. I just want, please like me. It's okay if I don't like you, but you please like me. And I kind of knew how to, like, be a chameleon. You know, if I was with this group, I'd act a certain way. If I was hanging out with this group, I'd act a certain way. However I thought you thought I should act, that's kind of how I would be. When alcohol came around, I, you know, wanted to fit in. I wanted to try alcohol anyway. So I would try to drink. And when I say I tried to drink, I mean, I couldn't do it. I couldn't finish a beer. I tried unsuccessfully on several occasions. And beer just tasted so gross and bitter to me. And I couldn't finish one. And that went on for a couple of years, maybe like freshman, sophomore year. And again, I grew up with alcohol not being a problem. My dad is a normal drinker. To this day, he drinks beer on the week, like on Saturday. We go to a restaurant, he'll order a draft and maybe finish it. And my mom doesn't drink. Drinking was not a problem in what I saw growing up and in my environment around me. But I couldn't wait to do it. So after several unsuccessful attempts, I kind of, like, gave up on it. And then that all changed when I went to visit my sister. She's 4 years older than me, and she was, at this time, going to Ohio University. And I was a junior in high school. She was a junior in college. I was 16, going on 17. And Ohio University had this event called Little Siblings Weekend. And my sister asked if I wanted to come, and I said, that sounds lame. I'm not interested. And then a friend of mine went, and I remember her telling me, like, she went to all these college parties and, like, what a good time it was. So the next year, it was every Valentine's Day weekend. So the next year when it rolled around, I signed up to go. And I didn't know what to expect, and nobody explained anything to me. Like, little siblings weekend, like, I don't know, do we hang out with other little siblings? Like, are there events we go to? Like, what do you do? So I guess I'll find out. So I took a bus up there, and my sister met me at the bus stop. And it was a Friday night, and she was in a sorority at the time, so that's where I was going to be staying. So I was like, this is kind of cool. So it was Friday night, and we went to a house party, and I just started drinking. And I don't remember starting to drink, and I'm sure I felt uncomfortable that night. being with all these college kids. But man, I remember that buzz, and I caught that buzz for the first time. And we're leaving one house party, and we're going to another one, and I remember saying to my sister, I said, hey, Kel, I think I'm drunk. So I'd never experienced it before. You know, I always fell short of that mark. And I remember she like rolled her eyes and was like, oh. And but I remember thinking, like, wow, so this is what everybody's been talking about. Like, oh, wow, this is freaking amazing. And got really drunk that night. I was Saturday morning, I woke up, and I was sick, and I was hungover, and, you know, throwing up. And I just felt awful. And I had a hangover that lasted the whole day, and never been hungover before. And I approached my sister again. It was like 4 p.m., and I said, hey, Kel, I think I need to go to the hospital. I said, I don't know what's wrong with me. You know, dramatic, alcoholic, right? And she, like, rolled her eyes again. She's like, you're just hungover. You're fine. And I was like, oh, that's kind of cool. Never been hungover before. So then I remember I took a nap, and I woke up, felt a little bit better. And, you know, it was Saturday night now. And I remember going out the door, and they had these double doors. I remember I still felt kind of queasy. And asking myself, you know, am I going to drink tonight? And I thought, well, yeah, absolutely. Of course I am. So that's what I did. This was Saturday night, and now I'm already getting better at it, and we go to another house party. And something I always like to point out, too, so looking back, I think, it was still never explained to me, but I think Little Siblings Weekend was probably a promotional event. You know, how OU is a private university, you know, it's probably to get the other family members involved. And my parents went there as well. So that comes into play in a moment. And so Saturday night, we go out again, and we're at another house party. And then I find myself in the driveway. And I like to provide proper context for this. So I was 16. And when I was 16, no older women were paying attention to the sophomores, you know, or the juniors in high school. I started to grow a little bit after this point. But anyway, at this time, you know, this girl was 21. She's my sister's friend, Deborah. And in the driveway, and Deborah and I are making out. She's 21, I'm 16. Alcohol made that plausible. And she kind of comes to, and she like pushes me off her. She goes, oh my gosh, you're Kelly's little brother. And I went back in the house, and I remember I had lipstick smeared across my face, and like, all these college guys were like, yeah, little Bevo, it's awesome. I was like, this is freaking amazing. Like, I am going to come here. This is the greatest college ever. And so, you know, Little Siblings was having the desired effect, I guess. So, you know, Sunday morning I wake up, hungover again. I didn't throw up though this time. So, yeah, I'm already, like I said, getting a little better at it. And I took the bus back home, and I remember saying to myself, you know, don't throw up on the bus, and I did not. But alcohol had entered my life, and I remember the next weekend, I was at one of my high school basketball games, and I was so, like, bummed and, like, bored and almost kind of depressed because last week I had this amazing weekend with college girls, kissing college girls and alcohol, and now this is just back to the same old, you know, lameness. And really what had happened was, like, yeah, I got drunk for the first time. So I said alcohol had entered my life. I didn't know that at the time. I learned that here in AA. I heard it said, you know, a hard drinker might say, you know, that was a good time last night. I was an alcoholic, will say, wow, that was life-changing. And from there, I figured it out, meaning I learned how to get drunk, because I never did end up liking the taste of beer. But I knew from this experience, if you just, you know, if you set your mind to it, and you work hard, and you power through three or four of them, and that buzz kicks in, and then we're good to go. So that's how I always drank. Like I uncovered it that night. I remember the next time I drank, it was like after prom. It was like, you know, 3 months later, maybe. It was couldn't always get alcohol, but, you know, we'd find our ways to, you know, somebody's older brother or somebody would get it for us. I always drank to get drunk, and never knew there was any other reason to. Then we find our places, right? When I graduated high school, I was 18, but in Youngstown, Ohio, there was a couple bars downtown that, in downtown Youngstown at the time, they've done a good job of redoing it. It was not a good area, but there was like known bars that you had to be 18 to get in, but they serve underage people. So I'd go there and drink all the time, and And you know, it was fun. I didn't get in any trouble. But I could have early on. So I remember starting to drink and drive for the first time, and you get away with it once. Wow, okay, I can do that again. And but for the most part, you know, this disease is progressive, as we're told, right? And I was able to keep things in check. So also at this point in my life, what do you want to do? What do you want to go to college for? Which is a pretty loaded question, right, for someone who's 18. But I actually knew when I was a kid, I watched WWF wrestling, and I was like, man, this is just the coolest thing. And I was like, that's what I want to do when I grow up. By the time I was I was 18, I was serious about it. And so, my parents saw that, I was serious, and they said, all right, look, if you, we'll be supportive of this. If you want to pursue it, you just got to stay in school. And I said, okay. And this is just why I always share it too. Just, I think as alcoholics, just my opinion, we tend to, have strong willpower and a drive. You know, we see it in Bill's story a lot. That drive for success was on. And maybe that's motivated by insecurity or that never feeling good enough, but not always, you know, and that could be a good positive, energy to use. But I had that drive, I went to the local university, Youngstown State University, where they actually had some of the first AA meetings, which is pretty cool. I found out years later. I've always been an artist, so I was like, I don't know, whatever. I'll major in art. That was like my mindset. Went to class, and then I had to find a place that would train me that, that I didn't have, that I could still attend school and attend my job that I had. And so ended up finding a place that met on my weekends, and I thought, this will work with my schedule. I'll go to work, and I'll go to school during the week, and on the weekends I'll train to be a pro wrestler. Only problem was the wrestling school was in Louisville, Kentucky, and I was in Northeast Ohio, which was a 6-hour car ride one way, 12-hour round trip. But, like I said, man, if we're determined to do something, set your mind to it, and you can do it. And Chuck Chamberlain used to say, if anybody's listening to Chuck C, he's like, we're talented people, man. He's like, she's a great doctor. I heard drinking. He's a heck of a mechanic. Man, that drinking. He's an excellent lawyer. Man, drinking, So I did this. I was going back and forth every weekend. I'm going to school. I'm working. I'm stopping at Ohio State halfway down and partying with my friends. And still, I can do that. I'm 20, 21, no consequences. Graduate college, immediately moved down to Louisville because I had some momentum going in the wrestling business. Ended up getting a contract when I was 23. And we hear it again in AA. I had arrived. That was an awesome moment in my life, and so now wrestling, not the most normal thing to want to do growing up, so like I was the only guy I knew of that wanted to do this, but it was kind of like AA in the sense of like I'm with a bunch of guys that grew up like me wanting to do this, and now we're doing it and traveling, and it was so much fun, and learning the craft of it, and then getting to share a locker room with guys I watched on TV, and it was really, really cool experience. But by the time I was 25, 26, my alcoholism had just progressed to the point where it's every day. I got to put something in me. I can't drink all the time. I can take these pills. I'm an athlete, so I need these, and I can take this and feel better, or take this to go to sleep. I prided myself on that nonsense of, we work hard and we play hard, and I show up and perform. That's all that matters. This disease is progressive, and it got to the point where I started to have those moments of clarity where I was like, I know that I'm in trouble because I can't go a day without being sober. The other thing was WWE, Trump, publicly traded company at this point, wanting to clean up their image a lot, at this time, and we have this company-wide meeting that they're cracking down on a lot of this, frat house behavior, and their drug testing, and it's like serious. I went to this big meeting with all like their lawyers, and I remember I was scared. I remember thinking like, I'm screwed, like, because I knew I couldn't stop. But it was whatever. We'll deal with it, And so sure enough, you know, there's that part in the big book where it says the alcoholic has a positive genius for getting tight at precisely the wrong time. So like right around the time this, they call it the wellness policy, right around the time it went into effect, I ended up in the hospital one night for my drinking, nearly died. Woke up the next afternoon and, you know, I just went out to, like any other night, to party, and then I woke up in the hospital the next day, late the next day. And when you wake up in the hospital and don't know how you got there, that's a strange feeling. And, you know, so one of my favorite speakers, Norm Alpe, would always talk about, we're here by seconds and inches. A few seconds, few inches, one way or the other, we won't be here. We wouldn't be here. And that's my seconds and inches story. I had passed out the night before. My buddy that was out with us happened to get up early to go to the, he wanted to go to the gym. His car couldn't start or something like that. I forget why, but he came to the apartment where I was at and found me unresponsive. And he got me to the rushed me to the hospital and, you know, saved my life, really. And as far as I knew, I just passed out and woke up. No big deal. There was a show that night. Like, and the doctors were like, now you got to stay another night. We got to run more tests on you, like heart tests. You know, brain tests, and, you know, they explained to me the severity of the situation. Then I started thinking, you know, keen alcoholic mind, I'm like, ooh, this might not look good for the company. Sure enough, when they found out about it, they ended up firing me over it. And man, I took that stance, like, you know, I wasn't the only, this ain't fair. I'm not the first guy this happened to. I had one bad night, and now I'm out. And my whole life and self-worth and everything who I thought I was wrapped up in this wrestler identity. And now that's gone. And, you know, I'd worked at that for the past 5 years, and now it's gone. And all my friends were there. And you talk about ego smashing. I miss the action figures game. And I was in, you go to Walmart and you see your ex-girlfriend's action figure. And I don't have one. And, yeah, you know, and I'd go to the dope house, and the kids, there's always kids. So there were kids there playing with some of my buddies' action figures, and it's just like, oh, you are such a loser, dude. Look what you threw away. And that pretty much was that moving in with the ex-girlfriend. She kicked me out. That's how I made my living. Had no income, so ended up moving back with my parents back in Ohio in the house I grew up in. And for a big shot like me, that was the worst thing that could happen. And so my solution is to drink. I have no tools, and I don't have any of my drug dealers anymore because I'm back in the town I grew up in, but I can drink, man. I go down to the Dairy Mart and get the little thing of vodka, and I would drink for oblivion. And I heard that term when I came to AA. I also heard, when I first got the treatment, I heard pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. I knew exactly what that meant. Yeah, at this point in my life, I was just drinking all day just to kill the pain and untreated alcoholism. I didn't know that's what I had. And if you would have asked me what was wrong, I'd have said, well, I had this really cool job. It was a dream job, and I got fired, and it wasn't fair. And if you followed up with, when did this happen? I would have said, oh, a couple years ago. And it was just, you know, maladjusted to life. So finally, I convinced my parents. I was like, look, just help me out and help me get back on my feet. Let me go back to Louisville. I'll start training again. I'll have the big comeback. And everything will be just like it was. You know, it's everything will be just like it was. And they agreed to do that. And this was in 2007. And I'm grateful for that year because it just confirms for me that I can't do this thing on my own because I tried. So I'm back in Louisville, that's where the training center was, and I just wanted to be around my old friends and have no responsibility. And there's that line in Bill's story where he says, I became an unwanted hanger-on at brokerage firms, and I related to that. And so one day I went into a walk-in clinic and met with the doctor. I remember her name was Dr. Rudemaker, and I believe God spoke through me because I just got honest with her. I wouldn't honest like that with anybody at that time, and I told her how I was living and what I was doing, and I can't stop, I can't stop what I'm doing. And I asked her for some pills or something. I said, is there something you can give me that'll like fix me, help me get off all this stuff? And I'm grateful she did not. Instead, she called a treatment center for me, Tenbrook Hospital in Louisville, Kentucky. And she said, hey, I scheduled an interview for you. If you want to go, you can go over there. And so, God directed because I went. And didn't know anything about treatment, didn't know anything about AA, didn't trust it. And so I remember I met with this lady at the treatment center. I remember lying to her because I was scared that if I told her the truth, they'd have to, like, I don't know, legally keep me. And I ended up signing up for their outpatient program. And that was on a Sunday. And I still had insurance. I had 3 days to show up. So Sunday night, I got drunk. And Monday night, I got drunk. And I remember Tuesday night, I popped a couple of pills. And Wednesday, that was June 18th, 2008. And I got up at 8 a.m. It's the earliest I've been up in a long time at that point. And groups started at 9 a.m., and I signed a few more papers. And so they're intensive outpatient. IOP was from 9 to 12 every day. And they gave me a big book, which I didn't know what it was at the time. And to start off the group, everybody went around the room and said their name and sobriety date. Everybody in there had like 10, 20, 30 days, which was a big deal to me because I couldn't go a day. I tried. And when I got to the front of the room, there was a woman and a man, and the woman said, my name is Kiarni, and today I make a commitment to help somebody. And she didn't give a sobriety date. And I remember, like, mentally rolling my eyes to that, thinking, like, dude, like, what? Like, what is it? What is this? Like, I've tried this before, you know? And I've been to see the psychologist, the counselor, the priest at the church I grew up at, and but then the guy next to her, who ran the group, he said, my name is Bob. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is November 26, 1989, and I don't want another one. And man, Bob immediately got my attention. Didn't think I was an alcoholic at this point, but it was like intuitively I knew it. In 1989, I never heard that before. I didn't know people got sober. At that time, Bob had 18 and a half years, which was another personal, neat thing for myself, because when I had 18 years, got 18 years today, because Roger, my sponsor Roger, had 18 years when I met him, and Bob was my messenger at this point in my life, and when Bob shared, Bob was a member of AA, and he worked at the treatment center, and the identification, man, I just related. I was like, this guy was just like me, and look at him. And Bob he was always dressed sharp, and he had a deep voice, and he's probably in his 60s. He just was well groomed, and I just noticed him. I was like, some of that stuff was worse than me. And look at him. And I knew he knew what he was talking about, and I knew he was telling the truth. And an outpatient, you had to go to a meeting every day, and you had to get a sponsor. So I did that, and like I said, I hung around enough to catch alcoholism, and I started to see. I saw the solution here. And at one point, I even thought, man, I wish I was an alcoholic because it looks like they got a pretty cool program going here, And Bob helped me with that. And like I said at the beginning of my talk, I'm too young. There's something about alcohol being legal that it's just, I watched my dad drink normally. And but they told me don't compare, but identify. And I was willing, I saw the solution here, and I had to get the desperation, I got a sponsor, I started to work the steps, man, and stuff started to change, I remember thinking, like, feeling like I could breathe for the first time in a long time, so I started to work the steps, and I remember, like, nothing physically around me had changed, but I felt different, and it was a strange feeling when we started to experience that. My buddy Terrence would always say, he was in and out of AA. He's got a lot of time now, but he was in and out of AA for a lot of years, and he would always say, man, I'd get about 90 days, and I'd say to my sponsor, man, something's wrong, nothing's happening. And the sponsor would say, man, nothing's supposed to be happening. That's called serenity. You're getting a little bit of peace of mind, and it feels foreign, we're used to chaos, or I was, and I wanted more of this, so I continued with the steps. I did my fifth step, and I went back home to Ohio that Thanksgiving, made some amends, and stuff started to change in my life, and the wrestling company, they were up in Cincinnati like a year prior to this, and Louisville is only about an hour and a half from Cincinnati. And so I went up there, you know, try to get my face shown and say hi, glad hands to people. And they were like, yo, you can't be here, man. And they escorted me out of the arena. And I was like, dang, dude, like, am I that bad of an influence? And then a year later, I'm sober now, only a few months sober, but, you know, I get the opportunity to meet with them again. And I had this feeling of, like, you know, I got fired for my drinking, basically. And I was like, I'm sober now, like, for real. Like, my own self be true. And but I tell myself, oh, don't get your hopes up. But it just, you know, God lined it up. I ended up meeting with them. I couldn't believe how receptive they were to me. And they ended up hiring me back, which I could not believe. And I remember telling my sponsor at the time, I was like, this is the same guy that told me, you know, basically, you'll never work here again. And I remember my sponsor said, he's like, you'll be surprised that people, they might not know what's going on with us, but there's something they can see in us that's, you know, there's a light. They can't put their finger on it. And so that brought me to the training facility. Had moved from Louisville down to Tampa. So that's why I moved down here. But I had enough AA in me to know that I needed to get connected down here. And that's exactly what I did. I remember I put the word out in meetings up in Louisville because Roger Hightower, who I mentioned, my sponsor, had moved down here about a year prior to this. He'd been sober in Louisville about 17 years. And so up back in Louisville, I was just asking people. I was like, hey, I'm going to Tampa. Does anybody know anybody in AA? And everybody, literally everybody, unrelated, all said, oh, you got to get a hold of this guy, Roger Hightower. And so I was like, man, I'm new. So I'm like, is this guy like the president? Like, who is he, you know? And but got down here, got connected with Roger, and got plugged in. In fact, this is so cool how we're all connected. There's a guy named Mike R, who had like 10 years when I got sober, and I remember he introduced me to Roger up in Louisville. And there's a man I stay in touch with named Luke, who's got long-term sobriety. He's up in Louisville, and Luke knew Roger, and Luke called me today, you know, for my anniversary, and we're talking, and I said, Luke, do you happen to know Mike? And I said his last name, and Luke goes, yeah, I sponsor him. And I was like, what? I go, because it's a common name. And I said, you got tattoos, you know, on his knuckles? And he goes, yeah. He goes, that's my son. I was like, get out of here. I was like, will you please tell him that? I was like, he might remember me. And I was the wrestler, and he introduced me to Roger. And so it's just one of those cool moments where, like, you know, we're all really much more connected than we think. Even last week when I was back home visiting my parents, I knew people that were going to be in town in Akron. So I called them up, and we went to Dr. Bob's house and met up and had a great time. And, you know, my parents, over the years, when my parents come down to visit, my dad would always notice. He's like, man, he's like, we go to Home Depot and you see people you know. We go to Publix and it's, you know, there's so many AAs. You know, it's a really cool, really neat thing. So, but yeah, I got down here. Everything I lost in my wrestling career, I got it all back and then some. And I got to do 2 years sober and it was fun. You know, like I said, I mentioned change and nothing wrong with the pro wrestling business. But for the first time in my life, I started to think, man, maybe I don't want to do this. Because I was what they called like a lifer, you know, like I'm going to be doing this forever, conventions and all that. And and for the first time in my life, you know, sobriety was the most important thing. I can remember, like, I'd have to miss my home group. I had to miss my home group for like a year, you know, because I'd be traveling. I remember, like, sometimes I'm like, man, dude, I'd kind of rather go have my home group, you know. And so I ended up getting let go. Couple years later, completely different circumstances. That's how the company worked, at least it did at the time. It's like a revolving door. In fact, you know, a couple of guys I got let go with at the time had gone back to the company a couple of times, actually. But I remember when they called me to let me know they were releasing me, I knew in my heart, I was like, wow, I'm done. And for me, again, just contextually, that was a huge thing for me. And that's came through AA, and I was 30 years old. I was happy to get out when I did, and started to, you know, get a whole new different career today because of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, being a pro wrestler for 10 years, logically, the next step after that is to become an elementary school teacher. So that's what I did. And again, on paper, that's, you know, that's how God works, man. That's how these steps work. My brand sponsor, Ron, would say, you know, when you stay sober, good things happen. And you know, on paper, there's no reason I didn't go to school for that. But through a series of showing up, taking suggestions, and listening, and just putting one foot in front of the other, you know, that's, I had a brand new career. Now I'm in my 11th year of that. I've been able to do a lot of neat things in sobriety. I had a business. I've been a stay-at-home dad. Worked that painting with a twist for a couple. If anyone's ever been there. But you know, we can do these things. AA taught me how to show up. You know, we hear that a lot, but it's true. I have a 4-year-old son, and it's really getting cool, right? Because they start to talk more, you can interact more, you feel that bonding more, guided by AA principles. Otis's mom, my son's mom, and I, you know, we got divorced about a year and a half ago, and that was tough. See, these were the things that I AA gives me peace of mind and happy, joyous, and free. You know, when I apply, doesn't mean stuff doesn't happen. Doesn't mean I have crazy thoughts that I have to like deal with or let go or inventory. But I saw. Because I've seen you guys do it. People go through stuff and not only stay sober, but you could do it with some serenity, some peace of mind, integrity. And I watched you guys do that. So when Roger passed away 2 years ago, you know, AA was there, you know, and going through the divorce, you know, like Alcoholics Anonymous was there, you know, living these principles. And it's incredible how that works. I'm so grateful for that because left to my own devices, you know, it'd be awful. we can walk through anything. And AA, like our book says, the main object is the book into this book is to enable you to find a power greater than yourself which will solve your problem. I knew I had a big problem when I came in and I'm so grateful today to be sober. And when life happens, and we hear it a lot in AA, life on life serves. And when things don't go the way I want them, and for the most part, things are pretty good, like usually. But when stuff does happen that the way I don't want them to go or the way I think they should go, you know, I can apply this program and these principles. And again, I'm just super grateful for that. The illusion, you know, I've been around enough to see that, not everybody stays here. And I want to stay here and my life's really full today. There's seasons for everything. I'm kind of in a slow season right now, which is nice. I'm a school teacher. I'm off for the summer, so I'm just enjoying that. But I just came out of a season where I just finished a master's program where I was in school full time, involved in internship, working full time, having a son. I don't want to embarrass anybody, but thank you, Jess, for your help. You know, and AA, when I put God in AA first, I have to do that. And when I do that, everything works out. Because the illusion can be, I have all these other responsibilities now. I don't have as much time for Alcoholics Anonymous. And I proved it to myself, just with these little snippets. Like, there'll be times where I'm like, I can't go to a meeting tonight. I got this work I got to do. And then usually what happens every time is 9:30 rolls around and they didn't get the work done anyway. I said, man, I could have went to the meeting. I remember I couldn't argue with my sponsor, Roger. I was telling Terry before the meeting, Roger worked the midnight shift as a truck driver. He had 3 kids, 2 of them were teenagers, and he'd still go to meetings all the time. So I was like, I had like no. But I'm grateful. I'm glad I was raised up that way, Alcoholics Anonymous. Because the illusion can be I don't need AA quite as much, and then everybody I've ever spoken with that has gone back out and happily has been able to make it back, but it's always the same thing. You know, stop going to meetings, stop talking to my sponsor, stop praying. Yeah, it's been a wonderful 18 years. I love this group. So glad I was able to come here tonight. I don't get to come here anymore. I'll be back at some point, but it's my son's mom. This is her home group, and so I watch our son. We have a nice deal worked out. I watch him every Thursday, no matter what. She watches him for me every Monday, no matter what, which is when my home group. So, but yeah, I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I really appreciate this group. Yeah, thanks for letting me speak.